Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland. Here I am on Broad Street, Oxford. And just behind me is the graveyard of St. Mary Magdalene. I believe the church is actually pronounced Magdalene, not Magdalen, unlike the college. So yes, it's Oxford United Kingdom, by the way, not Oxford, Mississippi. An easy mistake, I know. Right, so here we are, and you can see Oxford is very racially diverse. A lot of people of Oriental ethnic origin. Anyway, Broad Street is somewhat disfigured temporarily by these hoardings up here. I'm not sure what reconstruction work is going on, but Broad Street is descriptive. When we get to the major part of it, you'll see just how wide it is. And in medieval Oxford, this was the edge of the town. This was the town ditch. So there's certainly been an Anglo-Saxon settlement here. This is the 9th century AD, at least. And then it starts to be mentioned in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles and so on. And behind me is a bit of Balliol College. So Oxford University is divided into 39 colleges, and there are obviously they're permanent private halls as well. So a college is not like a department of a university, so undergraduates can go to a college, and there'll be postgraduates in most of the colleges as well. There are a few colleges which are postgraduate only, and it's not the case that each college does one subject. No, here we are at Balliol, and there you could be doing history or English or law or French or classics and all sorts. And they provide some accommodation on their main site. Some of the undergraduates live in, then they have extra buildings that people can live in as well. And those are their rooms for the dons to tutor people. Don is just this colloquialism for a professor or a lecturer. Of course, you could lecture here your entire career and never become a professor. Professorship is quite a high and exalted title. There's no such thing as an assistant professor here. So there it is. And the front of it is maybe not as old as it looks like. It's actually late 19th century, and it's sort of faux medieval. And Balliol wasn't always on that site. So it's named after John Balliol, an Anglo-Scots nobleman founded it. Well, in the late 13th century, there's a dispute between University College, Merton College, and Balliol, so which is the oldest college in Oxford University, and they all have some plausibility to their claim. And the John Balliol who founded this, his son, John, also named John Balliol, he was briefly King of Scots, the Tomb Tabard, as in the empty coat, seen to be playing a marionette for King Edward I of England, was later ousted, surrendered, and allowed to go abroad, lived in obscurity. So that's it. So it was a college of no great esteem until Benjamin Jowett became the master of the college. So every college in Oxford has got a head of house. The title varies from college to college. In some colleges they call it master, some colleges the person in charge is called president, in some places it's called provost, there's a warden, I think, of Merton, there's a dean of Christchurch. But because they've got different titles in different colleges, the generic term is head of house. So Benjamin Jowett, I think he was the Regius Professor of Greek here, he really put it on the map. I can't remember the ditty about him, but I'm the master of this college, what I don't know isn't knowledge, and so on. And that's when it became the nursery of colonial governors and prime ministers and so on, particularly left-wing politicians like Edward Heath. Okay, he's a conservative. Dennis Healey, Boris Johnson, all right, he's conservative, but more may spring to mind. And then right beside it is Trinity. You see these blue gates. And so there used to be a friendly rival between Trinity and Balliol. I know the late Reverend Bill Sykes, who's chaplain of my college, UNIV, and he was at Balliol in the early 60s. They would be chanting to each other and singing disobliging songs on Saturday evenings over the wall at each other. So this is a bit of Trinity. I think it was John Henry Cardinal Newman who said when he was here as an undergraduate in the 1830s, they said that the motto of Trinity ought to be drink, drink, drink. Because I've read a lot about what life here at the university in the 19th century, early 20th century, and how different it was. And one chap who was at Balliol, my goodness, the guy wrote memoirs of an aesthete. But anyway, he said they were speaking to some young ladies in the street one night, he and some other undergraduates. They walked back to their quarters, they walked back to their college, and then the next morning they were summoned before whatever the dean, the person in charge of discipline, and they were reprimanded for speaking to these women on the street. What an indecent act. Because someone had seen them doing it, followed them, and asked the lodge, who are those undergraduates who just went in? and reported them, whereas alcohol was totally acceptable. Bearing in mind people could be well under the age of 18, you could drink beer at lunchtime, no one would look askance at that. Or the classic Oxford novel, is really Brideshead Revisited, published in 1945, but the Oxford sections of it set in 1921, when the author Evelyn Waugh was here. And one of the characters, that cousin of his in his grand remonstrance, says, there's nothing wrong, nobody minds a man getting tight. Tight was 1920s slang for drunk. In fact, once or twice a term, he should. So you should get drunk occasionally. So women weren't allowed at the university till 1878. But even then, they couldn't actually be awarded degrees about 1920. They could do all the exams and everything, but they just couldn't actually be awarded a degree. And that was, they had complete equality for decades now. Quite a few American students here. So in the summer, some American colleges, they rent out the buildings of Oxford colleges and run their programs here. Or some Americans that are on a junior year abroad, they studied Oxford University for a year, things like that. And obviously there are Americans who are here substantively doing undergraduate degrees or postgraduate degrees. So there are an awful lot of postgraduates. Like when I was up, you know, something like 20% of the university was postgraduates. It's now like about 40%. They pay a lot more. It's even more cosmopolitan than it originally was. Obviously, it's always been an international university, but there are far more people now from China than there used to be in particular. There were started to be more from Russia. Now there are fewer from Russia than previously, for reasons one might guess. Probably Germans are the single most numerous foreign nationality. There are actually rather few French people here. I remember going to the French Society here once years ago, but there's only one person from France. They're from other Francophone countries. They were studying France, but they were not from France itself. Okay, so you see the New Bodleian, the extension of it, and then you can see above the door the statue of Sir Thomas Bodley, that 16th century nobleman who was named in honour. So this is just a whistle-stop tour of the Broad Street, and it's coming to an end. So many happy times spent here, and so many things I could point out to you. So then this building here, this is I'm about to show you. This was the Indian Institute, and above the door, if you look carefully, it says Indian Institute, opened by the then Prince of Wales, later King Edward VII. Then it was the History Faculty Library in my time. Now it's the Martin School, part of Oxford University. I don't know which subject is done there. But there is the King's Arms, popularly called the KA, a very well-known pub, and so on. So here is the New Bodleian, as I was saying, extension of the Bodleian Library. And behind me is this building here, the Clarendon Building, named after the Earl of Clarendon, who was a politician in the mid-17th century, an ally of King Charles I in the Civil War, so much so that the Earl of Clarendon's daughter, Anne Hyde, she married the King's second son, James II, and therefore she became the mother of two queens, of Queen Mary and then Queen Anne. So this man, Earl of Clarendon, after whom it's named, he became the grandfather of queens, but he had no surviving great-grandchildren through them. So he wrote A History of the Great Rebellion, it's about the Civil War, and he donated the proceeds to the university. I believe it was Chancellor of the University as well, and so on. So anyway, they've extensively restructured this very open plan ground floor these days, and there's sort of newspaper archives up top. A lot of it was dedicated to South Asia. So looking this side of the street, this is the Sheldonian Theatre, named after the Earl of Sheldon. And meant to be like a sort of a classical theatre open to the sky, but British climate being what it is, it's obviously closed to the sky, and they painted the ceiling on the inside. And you can see the cupola right at the top. You can pay to go up there. So graduation ceremonies are held there in senior, this big ceremony of the summer. I've never actually been to it. And the university orator delivers a speech in Latin. There's an English translation given out, but they say the English translation is actually missing bits, and those who are fluent in Latin can get some of the quips, which he has often diplomatically chosen not to translate. And you see the heads of Roman emperors there up high. That's supposed to look like Max Beerbohm Tree. He wrote his novel Zuleika about an unutterably beautiful girl walking along the street, and she was so stunning that even these stone statues turned their heads to gaze upon her. Okay, and this is a bit of a science museum in here. And I can remember when my first came up when they were doing some works on that, and you could even see the foundations of it. And coming on to Exeter College here, that's one of the colleges of Oxford University. That's the late Martin Amis was there. I remember reading the Rachel Papers, his semi-autobiographical novel about an undergraduate reading English here and wanting to stay up over the summer. And so they let him stay in his rooms for no extra cost. Rooms, plural, in the 1970s. You wouldn't get that now, because obviously financial pressures being what they are, they have to rent them out in the summer to maximise the college's income. But, you know, facilities were very basic in those days. I suppose it was cheaper to run the place. So that's more of Trinity, which I pointed out earlier on. So you're getting some idea what Broad Street Oxford is like. So it was very anti-car Oxford, although I like that as someone who's mostly a non-motorist, you see here. You used to be able to park here even only a few years ago. So encourage park and ride. Park your car on the edge of the city, take the bus into the city centre, ideally cycle. We've got a lot of cycle lanes and things like that. And they pedestrianised several streets, like Corn Market Street, the main shopping street in the middle of the city. I remember when I was an adolescent, that was open to cars. So it was quite contentious closing it to road traffic, but now that's met with universal acceptance. I think it's unquestioned. So a lot of building work going on. So there are over 20,000 full-time students here. Obviously they're part-time students in the Department of Continuing Education, often by Kellogg College. So look at Trinity there, and that was founded in the 16th century on the site of an earlier medieval monastery. So what can I say? I hope you find it most agreeable. Ooh, have a look in there. In the old days you could walk into these places unchallenged, but those times have changed. You see Trinity Chapel right behind me, and then this street down here, that's Turl Street. There was a twirling gate on it, so the twirl changed to Turl Street down there. Some wags used to deface the sign Turl to make it read it Turd Street. So, oh yeah, there's that gag about the Church of England. Why is it like Turl Street? It goes from the Broad to the High, bypassing Jesus on the way, because there's a Jesus College, which is part of Oxford. So, and then you see over here this Oxfam shop with the green writing beside flags. Whereas anyway, that's the very original Oxfam shop in the world, as in Oxford Famine Relief, founded at the beginning of the Second World War. So people donate their unwanted clothes and bric-a-brac and so forth, and then people can buy it very affordably, so that helps low-income people. And the other thing is, any proceeds, they go to projects helping those in necessitous circumstances in the United Kingdom and overseas. There we go, yeah. And the people, these are their volunteers, and they're unpaid or working there. And this boy here, look, he's in a Harry Potter smock. A lot of them are. The Varsity shop. So Varsity's obviously is a corruption of university. Drop the uni and change the A to an E and you've got Varsity. But that alludes only to Oxford and Cambridge. The Oxford campus stores. Well, that's where the real money is made. The merchandising, buying your hoodies and your baseball caps and whatever. Things change so much, there are not many businesses keep going in the same place. Remember, there used to be a Lebanese restaurant up here in 2003, but that has long since gone the way of all flesh. Right, thank you for watching. I hope you found this most illuminating and educative. So please subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, and I vainly hope you would warmly appreciate this whistle-stop tour of Oxford, and you may get a sense of what the place is like, a feel about what it would be like to walk along here if you're with me in person. Right, toodaloo everyone.